You're listening to a DM podcast.
Let's go on a trip.
Let's go on a trip.
Yeah, baby.
It's not too bad. What was the question again?
Okay, let's go. I'm Angela Caterns.
I'm Ian Rogerson.
And welcome to Suddenly Senior. This is a podcast series for those of us who've reached a certain age in life.
That's right. You can join if you're not our age, but it'll be a lot more fun if you are.
So strap yourselves in, check your blood pressure, light your spliff.
Pour yourself a small bevy and let's go.
Hey, Dodgy.
Yeah?
Have you ever woken up in the middle of the night worried about the future, about how many days or months or years you might have left and what your last days will be like?
Only if I'm in a lot of trouble with the wife, I've got to say. But look, I mean, everybody, you know, gets a little worried about the future. I guess I'm the same as everybody else. I just try to put it out of my mind as often as I can.
Well, so, you know, this has a name where it wakes you up in the middle of the night. It's called a mortality alarm. It's like a sudden anxious awareness of the inevitability of death. Mm. And it's common for people in their late 50s and 60s to experience. And our guest today has been wrangling with this herself of late. Jane Hutchin is a writer, a journalist, and a performer. You might remember her most recently, perhaps, as host of 1+1 on ABC TV. Jane, hi, welcome.
Hey, it's great to see both.
Lovely to have you. This is a great term, and I hadn't heard of it before I read your article, mortality alarm.
Yeah.
When did you start hearing it?
Oh, it would have been a few months after my mum died, which was last year. Mm. And, you know, in the sort of aftermath of those events, your life is thrown upside down, even when you expect the death of somebody. But all of a sudden, I just felt, OMG. Can I use, I don't know if
you
I can say
use
God,
anything you
God
want.
Word. I just thought, you know, I am next in line. Like, I am the next generation after my parents go. And while my dad is very much alive and with us, I just felt paralyzed by this idea. And in a kind of minute, I just felt my whole life had been turned upside down. It wasn't just the insomnia that caused this. It was this just panic about, you know, have I used my years productively so far?
Wow, that's where you went, was it?
Oh, yes. And then, oh my goodness, when I calculated the minutes I had left kind of thing, that was even worse. You know, it didn't seem like there were that many weekends left, for example.
Oh, Jane. So this was predicated on you dying at what age?
So I've been really conservative and said 85, and I'll explain why I mean conservative, because my mum was 99 when she died, 3 weeks short of her 100th birthday, and my dad is 95. So I'm guessing it might be genetic that we have longevity in our genes, and so I'm just hoping, you know, 85 or at least 85 good years. I don't know if I'm being overly optimistic.
That's so interesting. And so has that made you want to pack more into your remaining years?
Well, that's a really good question. So probably not more, but better. So in everything that – so the first thing I did actually was addressed my health issues. So I was pre-diabetic. I'm not huge – I mean, I've got a bit of extra weight on me, but not a huge problem. So I thought, okay, I'm going to deal with the pre-diabetes. I'm going to start building up my muscle mass and I'm just going to get fit, because everything I've read about aging is about going forward and keeping exercise as your best friend. So I started to do that. I've actually just had blood tests and I'm now in the normal range. I'm not pre-diabetic anymore. But that was the first thing I really wanted to sort of nail, because I wanted that to be something that was ongoing.
A firm foundation.
Yes, exactly. You know, if you can't move, you can't really plan a lot of things. Mm. And I think it sort of leads to a whole lot of other chronic issues from what I've read. So it was about being physically fit, but then it was about reassessing things that were important to me. And I love to work. I'm not the type who, you know, likes to sit around with a lot of free time. I like to do stuff and I like to produce stuff. I like to create things. And even, you know, I'm not like a very arty person, but I sort of see writing as a creative thing. And I like to sort of do projects that I might call my sculptures and things like that. So it's about deciding which one of those are you going to do from here on in, or are you going to continue to say yes to everything, which was a big problem of mine.
Mm.
So it's about choosing wisely, I think you'd say, and just, you know, making the point that the stuff that's important to me goes to the top of the list. A lot of stuff you'll have to say no to, because that's just going to use up very valuable time.
Yeah. And so it's quality of life. There's a number of things you've touched on just then. So it's the interesting thing is the first panic is, you know, I'm only going to live a certain amount of time. What am I going to do with that time? Whereas I tend to think, you know, what shows am I going to miss out on? you know, am I going to miss out on that sequel? Or what? Everybody has their own way of putting it into perspective. And that's also something that can be quite fluid, isn't it?
Oh, totally.
You can change your mind as quickly as you want to.
Yeah. So, look, I've still got a teenage daughter. And, you know, she's going to be finishing school in a few years' time. But until she finishes school, I can't sort of, you know, I've got to take her to school every day. And luckily, I don't have to pick her up anymore. But, you know, you've got to make lunches. You've got to do stuff according to the school calendar. So that is a bit restrictive. So for the next foreseeable future, I will be working, you know, around that sort of stuff so I can still be hopefully a halfway decent parent and just present for her. So, you know, being present is another thing. If you're doing so much stuff, being productive, but you're not present, to me, that's stupid as well.
Mm.
So I like to be present, whether I'm watching Succession
or,
you know, I'm choosing, well, what am I going to do with my remaining 13 million minutes? So, yeah.
They're big questions.
And so, Jane, after your mother died, you began asking other people, your friends and experts, for their thoughts around aging and the challenges. What did you discover? Did you learn anything in those chats?
Yeah, so the first thing I discovered was that, which was really fantastic for me, because I realised I wasn't alone and that there were a lot of people who had felt
freaking out.
but they'd had that sort of mortality alarm either in a similar way or in a completely different way. And they were sort of struggling quietly, silently. And I think if anything, the series of articles I did about this has kind of started people talking and thinking about, what is it I want to do, you know, to make my later life happier? So that was a really good thing to know that I wasn't alone. And I did a Facebook post. I started with a Facebook post because I thought, okay, is this just me, you know, too much time this week?
Well, it's the old person's medium, you know that, don't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, but it was lovely. So people would tell me their fears and thoughts. And I've always been someone who's not liked to talk about age, you know, because I sort of thought, oh, if people really know how old I am, they're not going to want to employ me or they're not going to want to do it. And I thought, that's horribly ageist, and from now on you are going to be, you know, an ageism fighter. You're not going to be an ageism fearer. So, you know, it's sort of just changed a whole series of conversations. I've started a Substack, which is surprisingly called The Juvenile Geriatric.
I love that name.
Yes, it's good. It's great.
And people can write in their own comments. And so I'm just trying to, I guess I'm trying to build a bit of a community at the moment. Yeah.
What a lovely idea. And it's a fear, isn't it, that people have? You know, the mortality thing is quite a jolting fear. And how you deal with that fear really defines you and allows you to move on. Because one of the things that constantly comes up with Suddenly Senior with us is the fact that you've got to be reasonably gutsy to take on old age.
That is such a relevant point because it is a gutsiness. And I think that gutsiness actually comes from community. You know, what you guys are doing here and just having conversations with people who, you know, I called myself the juvenile geriatric because I thought I'm starting my aging journey. You couldn't say, even though I've got my gold opal, you can't say I'm old yet. But, you know, there must be a whole bunch of people who are facing aging. So how do we do that in a kind of very present and deliberate way, not just kind of stumble into old age?
Can I ask you about your teenage daughter who you mentioned, who you're still, you know, actively engaged with? What does she think of you? Do she think of you as old, as a senior, or as a peer in some ways?
Oh, she doesn't think of me as a peer. I'm always going to be, oh, Mum, you know. But she's really, you know, she kind of, I think she likes what I do and she likes to see me excited and busy and, you know, pitching projects, sometimes succeeding, sometimes failing. And that's kind of the point of why I do it. I want to sort of show her that if you try, it's much better trying and failing at something than sitting around, you know, being grumpy or not having anything happen to you. And I think she admires that. She does every now and then say, oh, I told someone how old you were. And I said, did you? Thanks a lot, you know.
It used to be taboo. No? You would never ask a woman her age.
I know. Well, I got quite annoyed a few years ago when one of the newspapers wanted to write something about me with my age. And I said, why do you have to do that? Ooh. Who told you to do that? And apparently it was like company policy, which I don't think is right, frankly. I think people should have the choice to do that if they, whether they want to.
And would they be asking that of men, do you think?
Exactly.
Jane?
Exactly.
You don't often read that, do you?
No.
And notice how quiet I'm keeping.
Okay, well, we should let you get a word in.
Juvenile geriatric. And so what do you actually mean by that term, Jane?
So it's about, I suppose it's about setting myself up for a life of learning and discovery because juvenile, we all know that that means a young thing. And geriatric, that's my sort of end destination, if you like. But why spend that time, you know, I don't want to know that, of course, I know I'm going to get things, you know, whether it's a chronic illness or something worse like cancer, that could be in my future. But what is it I can do to perhaps stave something off, or if the exercise is able to keep something down, like my blood sugar, for example.
Mm. And it's attitude you're talking about here
too, isn't it? It is totally about mindset and attitude. And I don't know, look, some people might think that's really airy-fairy and stupid, but it works for me. And so I figure just do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just wondering, Jane, as somebody who's travelled the world, covering stories all over the world, you've come across so many different things, so many different permutations. What is your attitude towards where we're going next? As somebody, well, I mean, we're talking about the mortality thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, part of that is, you know, that fear of the unknown, where are we going? And everybody's got to have some sort of idea about what's going to happen. Some people are very definite, nothing happens, but there's a lot of other people with a lot of different ideas. What's yours?
You mean what happens after?
We're gathered.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I think that's it.
Mm. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust.
Yeah, I do. I do too. I'm not a believer.
Yeah.
I've always wished I was, and I've tried my very best. I used to be extremely spiritual. So when I lived in Jerusalem, for example, I used to go to this little church I saw on the hill, and it had a Scottish flag flying above it.
Wow.
And it was in the western part of Jerusalem, not in the eastern part, which is where a lot of Palestinian Christians live. And I just thought, I have to go to that church. I don't know why, but
you were drawn to it.
I was really drawn to it because it was a very heavy atmosphere, you know, people all around me killing each other. I felt extremely lonely in my life. I didn't like the hatred and the anger around me. I sort of thought, was this what I wanted to do with my career? So I used to go to that church and sit at the back and just cry. And the priest there, he was this amazing Scottish guy called Clarence. He would sort of rush after me at the end of the service when I would kind of run out of the church. And one day he stopped me and he said, "I'm Clarence. Will you not stay for a cup of tea?" And I did stay for a cup of tea, and then I kind of just became this groupie. But I kept saying to him, "I have to talk to you. I have to talk to you." I really wanted to discuss faith with him. And, you know, we never got the opportunity. There would be like suddenly I'd have cornered him, and I was about to sort of launch into, you know, how do I have faith or something like that, and then people would arrive. So there was never this opportunity. And then when he left Jerusalem, oh, the poor man, he died so quickly.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they went back to Edinburgh, he and his lovely wife, and I never had the conversation.
Wow.
So it sounds like you were ripe to be converted, Jane, but the circumstance never quite happened.
Yeah, look, and you know, my dad is extremely devout, so I can ask him any question that I want, but I think the secret is that I think it just has to be something inside you.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think anyone, you can't read a book and decide at the end of the book, okay, well, I'm doing that. Mm. Well, at least I can't. Mm. So, yeah, for me, it's, you know, I visited my mum yesterday. My mum is in the ground. Mm. And while I do find myself talking to her, and whenever I see one of those cracks in the clouds, I always think that she's looking down. I know this is crazy because, you know, there is no afterlife in my view, but I don't know, I guess we hang on to all these little treasures, don't we, to try and keep some kind of a contact with people we lose and love.
Yeah, and intrinsically people have been looking at it for thousands of years.
Yeah.
Exactly the same thing. I also think it's kind of okay if this is it.
Yeah,
and I think
agree.
It's a hard one for people to learn to come to grips with, if that is. But wow, haven't we had a fantastic time while we're doing it?
Yeah, yeah. That no, you're right. Sometimes I feel a little bit guilty saying that because I sort of think, well, you know, there's a lot of very, very smart people around here who have studied philosophy, have studied world religions, and you know, they must know. They must know.
Wow.
And so, Jane, I mentioned that you're a performer, a stage performer, and I understand last year you wrote and performed a show about your mum's Eurasian family. Had that always been a bit of a secret?
Well, what, the performing bit or the family bit?
Well, both, actually.
Well, the performing, I had loved drama and theatre as a child, and I majored in drama at uni, but it didn't really go anywhere. You know, I was cast as one of the witches in Macbeth because we were all the same height and then, you know, wore a
bubble,
Hessian.
Bubble, toilet trouble.
Fire burns. But I wanted to tell my mum's story, which I'd sort of heard pieces of through the years, but it wasn't until COVID when I researched her background more thoroughly using archives, which we could all access from our houses.
Mm.
And that really inspired me to turn her story into a stage play. And my beautiful teenage daughter calls it the world's biggest TED Talk or something very derogatory like that. But no, she did see it and she told me that she was transported and didn't think that she was sitting in the Seymour Centre, you know, when it was on. And I
Fantastic.
Thought that was pretty deep from a teen. So, yeah.
And did you enjoy it?
Oh, I absolutely loved it. I mean, I've got a lot to learn about performing. One of the things I really need to learn to control is my voice. So I'd find my voice was nearly gone by the end of the night. But what a dream to be able to talk about your mother, someone you love, to show amazing photographs of her life and my dad's life and sort of piece them all together and have a bunch of people in the theatre who are moved with you. And I'm sorry to say this, but, you know, comparison to TV when you're staring down the camera.
It's that dead eye.
Oh,
absolutely.
Goodness.
So you were getting something back.
Oh, you get something back every performance.
Wow.
You know, and people are moved by different things. And you kind of sense it. It's strange. It's dark out there, but you can sense it. And then you see someone sort of moving their fingers to their eyes, and you realize that they're crying, you know.
They're moved. Yeah, you've moved them. Isn't that wonderful? That's wonderful. Hey, Jane, and so is it true that you're planning another production about aging?
That is my next dream. Yeah, so I'm going to it will be called something like The Adventures of the Juvenile Geriatric.
Fantastic.
But it's in you know, even juvenile status at the moment. It's my dream. I know I want it to be a sort of similar one-woman show. I haven't found a producer. I probably need to get a writer to help me too. But I just wanted to spread that message to people that, you know, if you want to think about your life and have a bit of a laugh, hopefully, with the show, you know, it's well worth it. It's well worth actually doing a bit of a stock take and thinking forward. So that's what, that's sort of my goal at the moment. I don't know when it will be ready, but I'm pretty good at working on things long term, so I think it'll happen.
I get the feeling it probably will, actually, Jane. Just listening to you, I can imagine this will be popping up relatively soon. It's great. Well, I think one of the big things that comes out of what you've been discussing with us today is the fact that there is safety in numbers, isn't there? There's a real connection there that can help lift you through a number of situations and make you a better person and probably open your eyes to different areas.
Oh, most definitely, particularly in this field. You know, that's one thing I love about older people. I guess since I lost the fear of talking to older people, and that would have happened because my parents got old, and so I talked to people who were like them and I talked to them, and you realise how much knowledge they've got, how kind of dismissed they are in a lot of ways, and how people might look at them as being one thing, but there's all this depth and experience and life and love inside, and a lot of the time it's just they're desperate for it to come out. So if, you know, if there's anything in this space that I can do to make it better, yeah, why not?
Why not indeed? Fantastic, Jane. So lovely to have you on Suddenly Senior. Thank you so much.
Is that it? Are we finished?
It's pretty easy, isn't it?
It didn't hurt a bit, did it?
Oh, I thought we were like, that was 5 minutes in.
Yeah, I know. It's funny how it works.
Time flies when you're having fun. Thank you, my dear.
It's been a ball. Thank you so much.
Our pleasure, Jane. Please like and also subscribe.
Thank you for listening. I'm Angela Caterns.
I'm Ian Rogerson.
Leave a comment, as long as it's nice. If it's not,
that's right.
Fuck off.
Yes. See you next time, Ange.
Bye.
And I want wine with my meds.